This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Oh, my goodness. Who's going to be the next coach of the Battlehawks? Wrong answers only.
Me.
Yes, Chris Ronji. There it is. There
Ben
it is.
Johnson.
There's your new hire. Mike Martz.
He's got to be bored right now.
How much fun would that be? Put Mike Martz back in the dome one more time. Let's run it back and win a championship.
How about a guest coach every week?
Jeff Fisher.
Somehow they'll find a way to tie it. They'll tie that game.
They'll go 7-9, guaranteed.
Come on, man. You really want to increase the UFL's reach? Have a guest coach every week.
Every week.
Somebody different. Try to game plan
for
fans,
that. The fans get to pick, like they do a poll.
Yes. And the players.
Let's have some fun with it.
Those poor players are like, what the hell are we doing? I don't know
what's going on. What's wrong with St. Louis? These people are crazy.
Anyway, I think that should be the entire league. But, you know, nobody asked me.
You got to be different. You got to be different than the NFL.
Completely agree.
Have some fun with it. Your comments are welcome. Who should be the next Battlehawks coach? Let's ask Bernie Miklas as he joins us. On the Gas House Gang. I said, Martz, let's run it back one more time. He's 74 years old. You know, put him in the dome. I did that game with him that they ended up losing, actually, to San Antonio. But we did a game together, and I did ask him. I'm like, hey, I'm like, you know, they might need an offensive coordinator. Would you do it? And he's like, I think I remember him saying he would take the call. Like, of course he would take the call. But, you know, somebody's going to get in there and have a little fun. If you want to keep selling out games, you got to do something to stoke this crowd. Anyway, if you haven't heard, the Battlehawks lost their coach. They relocate the coach of the UFL. They just take the coach and put him somewhere else. So they put him in Orlando because they're building a new franchise there. They think that he's a good fit for that. He did it already here once. He lives in Florida, blah, blah, blah. So... Let's get a new coach here.
It's a lot easier than I suppose relocating an entire stadium, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or an entire franchise.
That is true. And Bernie, that whole Chiefs thing, I mean, you know, I hear that Missouri has lost another NFL team. Look, this isn't even close to St. Louis losing a team to Los Angeles. It's not even close. So they have to drive an extra half hour. I get it though. The state of Missouri takes a big hit here though, and Kansas gets the Kansas City Chiefs. They're going to play in a palace that's a little bit smaller. It'll be incredibly loud. I know that much, and weatherproof. But your thoughts?
Well, you know, basically the voters in Jackson County, Missouri, which is Kansas City in the suburbs, they were the ones who decided this, because in 2024 there was a sales tax measure to increase the sales tax by a certain percent. And all that money would go towards stadiums for the Chiefs and the Royals. And that ballot measure was soundly defeated. It wasn't even close. So that's when all of this started to drift towards the state of Kansas. No, I get you. You know, my wife and I were talking about it, and I, you know, cause she was shocked. And I said, well, you know, you got to remember something. That whole area is basically Kansas City suburbs, even though it's, you know, in the state of Kansas. And it's, you know, you know, it's the equivalent of just like sort of driving across the river if you want to, you know, go to Collinsville or something. It's just not that big of a deal. But it just sounds weird that there's not an NFL team there will not be an NFL team in the state of Missouri. It's just weird.
You know what's fascinating to me in this whole saga is when that stadium vote failed, the one you're talking about, Bernie, one of the biggest opponents for that tax is Frank White, who's a county executive, the Royals Hall of Famer. And they are still looking at building a new Royals stadium in or near downtown Kansas City in Missouri. And, I think a lot of people think that will still happen, that they'll stay in the States. They're not going to relocate to the other side. But it was interesting to me that here's somebody who played for the Royals and is like, nope. You know, we don't want any public money going that way. I found that to be very fascinating. Also, just if you guys haven't heard this, we played it on the Chris and Amy show earlier today. This was a caller. So you would think it's not that big of a deal. Hey, the team's just moving across the border. You could still go see them. They're going to be just 20 minutes farther away. And This guy called into 96.5 The Fan in KC. That's our sister station. And this is caller Mario, who is not happy.
Lucas, you are no longer mayor of nothing. You are just Lucas. And as far as I'm concerned, Lucas and White, you on the list. It's the Lucas and White list. Two losers is what you are, okay? You let Missouri down today. You turned Kansas City into a Poduck Cowtown, a.k.a. Omaha Junior, is what Kansas City is now. Now, you put that in your pipe and smoke it.
So Mario's not happy. He's calling Kansas City Omaha Junior now. And he's not happy with the mayor, Quentin Lucas, either.
Omaha Junior!
What did like how in the heck was the mayor supposed to change the outcome of this, right?
Yeah.
No, the mayor had no power to stop this. Now, you know, listen, if every barbecue, great barbecue restaurant in Kansas City, although barbecue in St. Louis is better now, but if every great barbecue restaurant in Kansas City decided we're all just leaving the state, we're going across the border to Kansas. Now, that would be a problem.
That would be a real problem.
That would really tick me off if I was over there.
I agree. Yeah. Arrowhead's cool. Look, I
like it.
It is.
We've all been there. It's great. Last time I was there was actually for the Taylor Swift concert. It took my daughter to go see her at Arrowhead. It's a great stadium, but the inside of the concourse, it's old. I mean, there are only two stadiums older, I think. Lambeau Field, and what's the other one?
Soldier
Field, of course.
Yeah.
Those two are older than... They're all these big complexes where they have little things around it and they draw Final Fours and national championships and Super Bowls and blah, blah, blah. And they're going to be in that mix. So that's what they want to do. It's whatever. I mean, I'm sorry that Missouri lost it. It does pain me to think that it's on Mike Kehoe's watch because I like the governor personally. But, you know, this is what happens if you don't have all your ducks in a row. And Kansas did. They had one singular voice, a collective voice, and they got the job done.
And the Chiefs were dealing with the state, the county, the city, and it was just a whole ordeal.
A mess.
I'll say this as one quick point to add. There would have been a time as new stadium projects go up and NFL franchises are basically, you know, holding their respective communities hostage to get what they want. There would have been a time where the Chiefs' contribution to this project, $400 million, there would have been a time where they're like, wow, well, at least that team's paying their fair share, right? $400 million is you know, the equivalent of like me going up the street to where from I live to go to Max Local Eats and having a couple of double smash burgers. That $400 million is nothing for an NFL franchise to contribute to a project that is going to only increase their revenue dramatically.
Absolutely.
And every one of those franchises is incredibly wealthy. So, yeah, I'm not impressed by that. But it shows you how much it's changed. Because $400 million would have been a big deal 10, 15, 20 years ago. Not anymore.
Amen. Pocket change. No, no doubt. Right. We're going to talk a lot of baseball on the show. Anouk Kurunaratne is going to be with us, the Cardinals executive, to talk about the team's TV situation, but also about the future of the fans and the team and the experience at the ballpark. That has been one of his tasks as well moving forward. So we'll talk about that. Aaron wants to know why the Battlehawks didn't go after Marshall Faulk. Marshall has a job. He's the head coach at Southern University. He's very proud of that. And he kind of drew inspiration from being an assistant for Deion Sanders at Colorado as the running backs coach. And so he is off and running as college coach. We're happy for Marshall. We are going to talk some baseball next. And are the Cardinals going to make another deal with the Red Sox? That could go down. We'll discuss what the possibilities are there. We are back on the Gas House Gang. Our visits with Bernie Miklas are sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin dealer. Bernie, what's the latest on the Cardinals trade front? And is this a possibility that the Boston Red Sox could be in play again? Are they interested in Brendan Donovan? What else can we send over their way?
Gosh, the Red Sox, ironically, in part because of Chaim Bloom, who completely rebuilt their farm system, turning it from one of the worst to one of the best before he was unceremoniously sacked by the Red Sox late in 2023. They have a lot of really good young players, and that includes some hitters. They have some really good prospects that would be attractive, I think, to Bloom in a trade because Bloom's very familiar with them. So, I don't really care. I really mean this. I think it's okay for all of us to have fun over the fact that Bloom's making trades with just the Red Sox so far. It's okay to tease him. It's okay to make jokes. It's okay to say, well, if the Red Sox win the World Series, will he get a World Series ring? You know, stuff like that. It's okay to have fun with this, right? But if the Red Sox make the best offer and he takes it over other offers that weren't as good, well, why should any Cardinal fan or media person care that it's Boston? If it's the best deal, you make it. I mean, so that's the way I look at it. Now, if you look back in a few years, because that's what we do, look back in a few years, and all these deals that he made with Boston did not turn out well, right? Well, he'll never hear the end of it. That's just the way it goes. That's life in the big city. But go for the best trade. I don't care who the team is.
And there's nothing wrong with your first deals as the president of baseball operations being with organizations with which you're familiar. I don't see any problem with that. And I agree with Bernie. I mean, if the deal is right, if it's the best one offered and you don't think you're going to get another one, then you take the deal that's presented to you. It doesn't matter who it's with. Now, I suppose if 4 years from now, the only trades he ever makes are with the Red Sox and Rays, then yeah, maybe we can have a little criticism here, but there's nothing wrong with this.
Yeah. I find it hard to believe that the market for Brendan Donovan is anything less than thriving right now. So I think this is going to be the biggest trade that Chaim Bloom will have made so far. There's no question. All due respect to the Contreras and Gray deals. And I mean, after all, those guys had no trade clauses. So that limited the number of teams that could actually be involved in discussions. But that's not the case with Donovan. Plus, he's got 2 years of contract control. He can play all those positions. He's a very, very attractive player. And I think the pressure is on Chaim Bloom, frankly, to come away with a great deal. You know, not the kind of deal where people are maybe murmuring, geez, that's all he could get. I do think people's unrealistic expectations tend to be unrealistic. I saw a lot of the, after the Contreras thing, even after the Gray thing, it's like, I can't believe he didn't get any can't miss prospects. And well, first of all, as I said last night on the Sports Rush Hour, there's no such thing as a can't miss prospect. A can't miss prospect doesn't exist.
Right.
I mean, you make your evaluation and you take your chances, and you have the reports and you have all the information you need. And a prospect may look really, really good. He may look like a guy that, wow, this guy's as close to as a short thing, blah, blah, blah. You never know. How many top prospects have flopped? Conversely, how many guys drafted in the like 17th round or whatever, the 10th round? Albert Pujols, what round was he drafted in?
13.
You know, yeah. I mean, how many of those guys have come out of nowhere and become major stars? So this whole, well, he had to get a can't miss prospect.
Right.
It's just really naive.
Well,
and you don't get them for aging players who are, you know, it's not like you have 4 or 5 years of contract controls. They're rentals. You don't get them at that kind of deal with the age and the contract control that Gray and Contreras had. I'm sorry, Tom.
Yeah, no, it's okay. And, you know, I love our fans. I mean, they pay attention and they're passionate. Sure. But I do think that as this Red Sox thing goes on, they start to get skeptical and they get all cynical is probably the better word. Because if they acquire, let's say, a hotshot pitcher again for Donovan with the Red Sox, if that same pitcher came from who's the top farm system considered right now? Detroit, the Tigers, or the Dodgers, or the Mariners, people would be like, oh, yes, they got, just be based on reputation, but because it's the Red Sox, you got to trust the system is what I'm saying. You got to trust the evaluation that Bloom and Cerfolio and Day and everybody else have put together here. This is, you got to give it time to, you know, marinate. You got to give it some time to work before you start criticizing their evaluations and their scouting, which is an ongoing thing right now with the Cardinals. So that's my two cents on that. Without a doubt. If you're looking at what could happen next, I'd, I mean, it could go down today if they make one more deal. But after today, I think you will see a bit of a pause during the holidays and then come back around full throttle. Maybe not as far as New Year's, but definitely after Christmas. I think today's the day if something else is going to go down.
Well, yeah, I don't think you're going to see it on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day and maybe early next week or something like that. But you never know. I mean, it's not like it is entirely unusual for sports deals to happen on Christmas
Eve. Or at least
Eve
come
or,
out.
Or day. Yeah, I mean, you know, stuff like that happens all the time. So yeah. I don't know. But yeah, we could hear about conversations and if talks have heated up with another team about a particular player. But and I also have no idea which guy's going next. I don't know. I mean, I know the ones we've talked about already. It would seem like it would be easier to deal relievers at this point because you're not looking for as great of a return. And, you know, maybe the market's always high for pitching, but it's not like you're talking about position players or starting pitchers or, you know, something like that. So maybe a reliever goes next, but I think we're all of anybody, I'm just really curious to see what they're going to be able to do with Arenado.
Well,
I think it's going to be a lot tougher than we realize it's going to be to make something happen there.
I think that one will take a little longer because you got to see where Bregman and Suarez are going to end up. Bernie, that does bring up a good point. I think the other thing, if you want to get your fan base going, if that matters, I mean, you just make the deals and just stockpile your farm system. Don't worry about what people's reaction is. But if you want to have a little fun here and you want to get people going, if you end up getting somebody, it sounds like what Haim told me Sunday anyway, right-handed bat preferred, somebody who's versatile, and that would be the offensive preference right now. And that would be the next step, I think. But pitching, I'll take it all day long. You got to keep adding. But if you're talking about a return, Bernie, that would be fun to see some young hitter that could emerge.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, get back to Ranji's point. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Donovan thing still takes a while, only for a couple of reasons. First of all, we're all waiting to see if the Arizona Diamondbacks trade Ketel Marte, their second baseman. There's a lot of teams involved in those discussions. And there's it's also a situation where if all the media reports are true, you know, Haim Bloom's talking to a lot of teams. And when you talk to a lot of teams, that means there's a lot of discussions and you circle back and have more discussions and you play one team against the other and you try to leverage it to get the best deal you can. So that's going to take a while, much longer than, say, flipping Jojo Romero, you know. So I'm totally patient with Haim Bloom. I made a prediction, not that I do that very often. I said Donovan won't be traded until after New Year's Day. That could be wrong. It could happen next week. Who knows? But I think we all need to just wait this out because this is kind of a complicated trade because it also depends on what other teams are doing in their hunt for someone like a Ketel Marte, even some other guys. So, but he'll get him traded if he wants to trade him. And I think the offers will be there that will make it worthwhile to trade him. I just wonder, and again, I got to remember, you know, it's not about 2026, but, you know, with Contreras gone, especially, I'm looking and I'm like, wow, you know, where is the next power hitter coming from? It could be Herrera if he can stay healthy. I mean, it could be, I almost reluctant to say this because I'll get shouted down, and I don't blame anyone for shouting me down because you can't say, oh, that's okay, Gorman and Walker will get it going. We don't know that. We have to wait and see. I support giving them another chance, especially in a rebuild. But where is the power going to come from over the next couple, 3 years, unless Joshua Baez really emerges as a dude, right?
Yeah, totally. That's the name that pops into my head outside of Herrera, Baez. I mean, we've got some candidates out there that could hit into the 20s. I think Burleson has that potential if he's playing every day. I think there's some other. I think Mason is going to contribute a little bit of power here and there. Wynn can hit him. But you're talking about a legitimate home run threat. There aren't any. And so they're going to have to hope that they can land one here and grow them. Let's do this. Anouk Karuna-Rodney, I'm really looking forward to this conversation, yeah. Not just about getting us updated on his perspective on the TV situation, but also just want to hear his perspective on the fan base, on his experiences so far with Haim and with this team. What a pleasure to welcome the Cardinals Senior Vice President of Business Operations to the Gas House Gang. I know he is well aware of the Gas House Gang and all of you watching and listening. And the Cardinals pay close attention to what all of you want and what all of you talk about. And he is Anouk Karunarotne with us on KMOX. Anouk, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
It's great to have you on. Happy holidays to you and your family. Let me start with this. Let me get right to this one. I know there's a lot of discussion right now about the Cardinals television situation. If you could use this platform to update your fan base on where that stands.
Yeah, so I think, you know, for those that aren't aware of the situation, it was reported, I think, earlier this week that one of our rights payments had been missed by FanDuel Sports Network. And that's true. At this point, we're working directly with FanDuel Sports Network, with Major League Baseball and other stakeholders, just to understand what our alternatives are moving forward. You know, our focus is on ensuring continuity for our fans. We're very confident that the games will be on the air next year, that we will have, you know, both on cable and on a direct-to-consumer streaming option. And we're working through with all of those stakeholders what our different alternatives are to achieve that. But the most important thing for fans to know is that Cardinal baseball will remain available to them.
How will the broadcast look different, if at all, if it's not on FanDuel Sports Network, if it is something else? Is there a way to know this early what might change?
I mean, I think at a high level, I wouldn't expect any significant changes if we, you know, are not on that. But I think it's probably too early to speculate, you know, at this stage, until we can kind of clarify which path we're going down. We haven't spent as much time on the answer to that question as much as, you know, just the higher level pathways at this point.
This is a turbulent time in sports because of the uncertainty and the chaos and the somewhat fragile nature of broadcast rights. Do you think there will be a time anytime soon where this thing will stabilize and everything will be normalized without the fear of all of a sudden taking a revenue hit in a deal that you thought you had with someone that was going to hold up?
Yeah, I mean, it does feel like My hope is that the answer to that question is yes, and that sometime soon it will stabilize. You know, clearly right now we're still going through this transition. You know, as we go through it, you know, there's different elements to it. In some ways, there's definitely some financial aspects that create short-term challenges that we're dealing with. You know, we had that last season when we renegotiated the deal, and, you know, to be determined, you know, what the outcome is this year, we'll hopefully know soon. But the financial piece is only one part of it. I think as we go through this transition, there are other positives to it, too. You know, we're just this past season, we were able to offer the direct-to-consumer streaming option to fans, which was a big improvement, you know, both in terms of reach and, you know, ease of use, I think, for some people that prefer to watch that way. So at this stage, what we're focused on is ensuring that there's access, that people have the ability to access the games if they want to, and trying to create, you know, some stability in their alternatives to do that, because fundamentally that's where the value comes from. And, you know, how it gets monetized in the long run, I hope will stabilize, to your point. But in the short term, that's our focus, is just making sure people can watch and that we keep improving the product and their ability to consume.
Anouk Karunarotne is with us on KMOX. He is the Cardinals Senior Vice President of Business Operations. Chris, you wanted to ask him something?
Yeah, whether or not, Anouk, this is a... I know that some teams have done this. Marquee, for example, with the Cubs, Boston with Nesson, Yes Network. There are organizations that own and run their own television operations, and not every team is interested in that. Is that something the Cardinals would be interested, whether it's, you know, sometime relatively soon or down the road?
You mean in terms of just like completely running it independently?
Yeah, like marquee network,
that is an alternative that we. Yeah, we did consider that. You know, I wouldn't say that it's completely off the table, but at this point, given the timing of when we received this news, it's not likely one of the options for us for this coming season.
Anouk, you have, for those who aren't as familiar with your background, this is actually your second go-around in St. Louis, as you were at Wash U for quite a while, I believe a six-year period, and then most recently with the Toronto Blue Jays, where you were overseeing a lot of what you're doing right now, fan experience, sales, marketing, operations from the business side. This photo that we have up on our video stream is of you sitting in those blue seats. I got to assume that is right there near the field at Rogers Center. That had to have been a thrill ride for you to see the Blue Jays have all of that success after what you helped build there.
Yeah, it was definitely some mixed emotions watching from the sidelines. Rooting for the people that were part of that organization, and it's always mixed emotions when you watch playoff baseball and you're not in it. But I think, like, I reflected a lot on the journey and my time at the Blue Jays. And, you know, we've talked about going through the competitive cycle. You know, when I started there, the team had just gone to two straight ALCS in a row, lost in both. And then we went through a period of transition and, you know, a rebuild, and both on the business and the baseball side, we were focused on, you know, how do we create a sustainable contender and compete and win in the AL East. Part of that was, you know, smart baseball operation. Part of that was figuring out how to engage the fan base and drive revenue so that we can compete in a tough division. So it was really cool to see it culminate in a World Series. And I was able to go up there for game two and to see the stadium, you know, in action after having done all those renovations, and see it on the big stage was a little bit surreal, to be honest, but very fulfilling.
Anouk, another thing I want to ask you, we've been talking about the TV stuff, but the Cardinals have a challenge of getting their fans back. And the easy thing for me and others to say is like, well, if they start winning again, the fans will come back. Except you never, in the state of the franchise right now, with Chaim Bloom redoing some things in a major way, not sure when the winning part will kick in. But what can you do to attract more fans and maybe make it a really enjoyable experience for them at the ballpark, even if the Cardinals on the field are not in their best form? They will be in a couple years, but right now it's kind of a downtime. So how, that's a tricky challenge. What do you do to get them back?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, part of it is putting in context, like what should our expectations for getting people back this year be? And, you know, measuring it against the bar of 3 million fans that was set, you know, for a 20-year period with very competitive teams is maybe not realistic going into this year. So I think it starts with us honestly asking ourselves, like, what could good look like? You know, most importantly, we had 2.25 million fans come through the gates last year. Most importantly, we need to do a better job of creating memorable experiences and compelling experience for those people. And that's everything from, you know, the value they perceive and they're taking in the food and beverage prices, the entertainment value of the things that we're doing, you know, both, you know, on the scoreboard or other activations or promotional items or things like that. I mean, there's a whole host of things that go into the non-game aspects of attending a game. But for us, we've got to do a better job and continue to improve to make the people that do show up for us feel appreciated and feel like they want to come back to another game. 2.25 million fans in a down year is a number that most most organizations in baseball would gladly accept. So I think we have to put it in context, is one. Two, in terms of attracting new fans, you know, last year we started thinking about how do we attract more younger fans. We launched the Friday Night Live program on Friday night home games, which was pretty successful, and we're going to look to build on that. Another group that we're really trying to enhance the programming for is for families with younger children, you know, particularly on Sundays, but not only on Sundays. So I think for us, it's thinking about how we can create, you know, differentiated and targeted experiences that resonate with different groups in our fan base. And if we do a good job at delivering on those experiences, you know, the hope is that people will find value in coming down here. But it's not just one thing, you know, that we can do. It's going to be 101% improvements in different areas that in the end are going to add up to helping us achieve our goal.
Anouk, what is the possibility of an extended lockout do, or how does it factor in whatever decisions or planning you make?
I mean, I'm very much a control what you can control, you know, believer in that philosophy. And so at this stage, we're, you know, planning for a great year of baseball next year. And I think, you know, the more progress we can make towards that on the business side, the better position we'll be for the following year. So I wouldn't say that it's, you know, something that we're thinking about or that's having an impact on the things we're doing day to day.
One last thing, Anouk, and that is what you and I have talked about since you landed in St. Louis is the importance of being transparent with your fan base. Chaim Bloom joins us every week on KMOX. You're joining us now. Ollie Marmol joins us on the Gas House Gang on Tuesdays. Wants to answer questions, wants to be open and honest. Just your feelings on that and your connection with and your knowledge of this fan base. I just mentioned you were here for 6 years at Wash U. You've seen it at full throttle. You know what this fan base is about and what they want.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I can only comment on the period of time I've been here and really studying it. You know, I was here, you don't always take it. And once you work in the industry, you kind of start to appreciate nuances you don't know exist. Before that, I'm sure all you guys can relate to that. So, but I would say, I mean, obviously an incredibly knowledgeable fan base, one that is certainly able to understand all of the nuances that go into decision making, whether those are business and baseball. And you know, I'm a believer in, and I know Chaim is as well, that like having people talk about the team is one of the best forms of engagement. You know, even when there's decisions that get criticized, people are being critical because they care and because they're passionate. You know, in many ways, I think we view it as part of our responsibility to give people insight into what's happening. And Chaim said too, you know, he was clear about what he was trying to achieve this offseason. You know, some of those moves aren't easy, like you talked about yesterday with Wilson. But all we can do is be clear with our fans on what we're trying to do and execute on that. And, you know, that's, I think, very much part of the philosophy of what we're trying to achieve here.
Appreciate your time very much. Thank you for making your this time here in the middle of the day, which I know is busy. It's the holidays and things are going crazy all over the place. Thank you for doing this and all the best to your family. We'll catch up with you real soon. Winter warm-up caravan right around the corner. Go to cardinals.com for all of that. Thank you, Anouk.
Thanks, guys. Merry Christmas, and we'll see you soon.
Hey, we got a few minutes left with Bernie Miklas, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin dealer. With Bernie, with Chris Ranji, I'm Tom Ackerman. Thanks to Anouk for joining us, Anouk Karuna-Rodney from the Cardinals, and thanks to all of you for your suggestions. People have been popping in some power suggestions. I had a text from a friend of mine suggested Blaze Jordan maybe is somebody they should keep an eye on who could pop a few home runs. That's good. I got that. Chase Davis was another name that showed up in the comments. Yes, you know, if he could find a little rhythm and get into a connection. So some other ones, but, you know, they truly need a big power source. Bernie, I also had a suggestion for Aeneas Williams as coach of the Battlehawks. So, you know,
I kind of like that. Yeah.
I like that too.
I kind of like that.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about, I love the idea of Mike March, but you know how the UFL works. If it's still this way, and I think it is, you know, the teams are all centrally located during the week, and they've been in Arlington, Texas. I don't know if that'll still be the thing. So It really means like not living in your own home for, you know, most of the whole season. So it's a little more challenging that way. If in fact that's still the case in that league, but there's a lot of good coaching candidates out there. If they look, and they need someone that's got to be the face of the franchise and be really good at it, like Anthony Becht was. So fans here really liked Anthony Becht. Media liked Anthony Becht. So they're going to need someone who's a good coach, but they're also going to need someone who knows how to sell and promote the team in a way where he's got a sense of humor, he's got a personality, people like him. They want to be part of his team, you know, as fans. So we'll see what they do, but it's bad timing. Mm-hmm. It's been a rough sports year locally, and now you got the UFL taking our coach away.
You know, That's right.
It's like after the Cardinal had a tough year, the Blues have a tough year, St. Louis City SC's had a tough year, Mizzou's having a tough basketball season so
Dude,
far.
Speaking of
you
that,
you know,
what did I say? It might be close. Mizzou might have a chance because it's the bragging rights game and it's on, the middle of the road between the two schools that you've got a good even crowd. Nope. That was not what I thought was going to happen.
Bernie,
yesterday.
That was one team was prepared and ready to go, and the other team looked completely unprepared.
I was really furious watching it because I want Mizzou to win. By the way, I really like Illinois a lot, and yeah, I'm allowed to have it both ways when it comes to Mizzou and Illinois. I like both of their football teams and both of their basketball teams, so I can be Switzerland. But I was furious watching it because there's certain things that are very obvious about Illinois basketball. They love to shoot the three. Their rate, like nearly half of their field goal attempts from the floor are three-point shots, and they score. They rely heavily on the three. And so if you're going to have any chance to beat them, you're going to have to defend the three-point line, and you're going to have to defend it vigorously. Mizzou did the exact opposite. Now, here I am, a slob on the radio, and I was delivering a scouting report. Mizzou's got to stop the three. And it's like, I guess no one, including the coach, gave the players that scouting report. They just let them take open threes all night. It was infuriating.
It really was. It was tough to watch, unless you're an Illinois fan, of course. Bernie, appreciate sure. you. Have a great
yes,
rest of your day. And if I don't talk to you, man, have a Merry Christmas. I'll send you a Christmas text. You know that's coming.
All right. Merry Christmas to you guys. Take care.
And all the best to Chris Ronji. Merry Christmas.
My
and
guy.
Go Bears.
Hey, big game this weekend.
And go Hoosiers, although I got to wait a little longer for that. Thanks for joining us for Matt Pajeski, Frank Ladd, Johnny Camp. I'm Tom Ackerman on KMOX.